Okay, I think we're live now. You're listening and watching, maybe, episode 39 of Lara Chat Live. We are one Canadian short. I don't really see that as a problem. I think it actually adds value, but we'll go with it. Our leader, Sean, is sick today, so he's not here, but I am here, Eric Van Johnson. And I have a whole cast of characters. So, J-Mac, why don't you start us off?
Hey, all right, yeah. Jace McCreary, J-Mac, as I am lovingly known in the Liverpool community has actually been really good at adopting that, which I appreciate. Somebody, like, I notice emails now are coming across, like support emails, and they're like, hey, J-Mac, what's up? And I'm like, it's working. So, but yeah.
And we got Joe.
Hey, I'm Joe Ferguson.
Very good. Short, sweet, just how I like it. TJ?
I'm TJ Miller.
Fantastic. And Matt.
And I'm Matt Launce.
The always talkative Matt.
Mostly smiling and giggling to himself, Matt.
So we pulled this together last minute. It was like, okay, we're all doing this. We're all going to get together this Thursday. And then all of a sudden it kind of started falling apart when Sean got sick, because he's kind of the ringleader when it comes to this. And fortunately, everybody stepped up and came back. So here we are. What's everybody been up to? All right, let me start things off. Who's excited? Who's planning on going to New York this year?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah, TJ?
Yeah, I won't miss one, man. That's where all my like Laravel family end up at, you know, across the year. So, I mean, for me, it's not even really about the talks anymore. Like, the talks are good. They're recorded. I'll watch them later. For me, it's so much more about being able to see all these people I know and I'm like in friends with and appreciate, like, all in one spot. So for me, it's so much more of just like a social gathering to like hang out with people that I value being around.
Yeah.
I think he's wearing the shirt too.
Oh my God, I am. Yeah.
Nice. Chicago. LairCon Chicago. Yeah. I definitely echo what TJ said. I mean, I think, like I've said from the beginning, LairCon definitely does it right. It, you know, it's always a great venue. It's a great atmosphere. Everybody's very social, which I really enjoy. You know, so you'll go to certain tech conferences and, you know, it's just kind of like, nobody's really talking to each other, you know, and I think PHP is pretty good about that. In general, it's much better than other tech that I've noticed. But at the same time, I think Laravel as a subgroup is even better. But on a separate note, or I guess related note, I'm very excited, too. That's back in New York because I lived in New York for a little while and we were going to go anyways in the summer as a trip. So now I can kind of double duty the trip. And so that's always fun.
And see, you're a small business owner now, so it's a tax write-off, right?
That is true, but I'm speaking this year, and I think, you know, that at least gets me a free attendance and whatnot. So
okay, all right, cool. So you're speaking, TJ. Are you speaking this year?
I don't know for sure yet. We'll see.
Okay. All right. Joe, any plans to make it up to New York?
Not at the moment. I did submit to speak. I sent Taylor a handful of talk ideas. Some stuff that I would be really excited to build. So we'll see.
Cool.
I'm not sure if I don't get to speak, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make it because it may be harder to sell work on two conferences right around that same time frame. There's another conference that I'm helping organize and helping build the content for. So that's going to be in May. So looking forward to that, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to swing Laracon as well.
Which one is
that? PHP Tech 2019 in Atlanta.
PHP Tech. Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm working with Allison, who is Snipeyhead. If you're familiar with her on Twitter or GitHub, she's really awesome. She and I are working on the advanced PHP talk for PHP Tech.
Oh,
or cool. The advanced PHP track. We're building an entire track for Tech, and there's a handful of other people that are building other tracks as well. So it's going to be a curated event this year. Tickets should be going on sale soon. We're almost to the point where we have to turn in all of our talk titles. So they're probably going to get ready to announce that pretty soon.
Yeah, she lives here in San Diego. And actually, when we had the Laravel user group, came and spoke at the Laravel user group for us once. So good people. So how about you, Matt? You planning on going to New York?
I don't know yet.
You don't know yet?
I don't know yet. It depends. because I have two work meetups that we're going to be doing this year. We normally do one. Last year, the whole team was able to go to Laricon, and this year it might be a private event for our team. And if that's the case, I also have two destination weddings I have to go to. And then I said I was going to go to Wave PHP this year. So that's five
things. Are they doing Wave Ski again?
That's so the plan. Cool. Yeah.
All right, cool. I mean, I'm just making sure it's not going to get canceled like this thing
was. Oh, man. Well, you know what I'm really looking forward to is seeing Matt at Wave PHP like I did last year. Oh, wait
a wasn't minute.
There.
Yeah, that was the saddest part of the whole conference.
Yeah, the plan is to do Wave. I think if we do it this year, and again, the plan is to do it, that we're running into a little bit of a problem with the venue we're at last year, the Bahia. Everybody really liked the Bahia, and so we're trying to position it to have it at the Bahia again, but they're the dates that they're offering us aren't very, very conducive to like the overall community. Like it's either conflicting with other big conferences, or it's just like bad timing. So we're trying to find a good date, but we might actually have to start looking for another venue. And if we do, it's going to probably be in that very close to that same area, and it's kind of the same feel. But
awesome. That was a good setup last year.
Yeah.
But we're thinking this year, when we do it, we're going to like keep it with the two tracks, but specifically have one track for advanced talks, because that's probably the biggest feedback we got from people who attended and people who didn't attend, was that there weren't enough advanced talks, and they'd rather go to a conference that had more advanced talks.
I definitely agree. I was just kind of thinking about this the other day, so I'm gonna jump in, sorry, but you know, I definitely agree with having more advanced talks. Two things I'll say about that. You know, so first, yeah, I agree. I think there should be a bit more advanced talks here and there, because I do think that things, when I go, I guess, as an attendee, I feel like I understand that maybe there'll be a very small piece of one talk that maybe I'll kind of really enjoy or pick up or learn something from, or I go for that talk. But you know, I feel like other attendees probably do hope to see some more advanced features or deeper dives or whatever. So I think that's good. But the other thing I was going to say about that is, you know, I would definitely weigh the people that went that gave you feedback over the people that didn't go and said, oh yeah, would go if like, you know, you had like a better talk.
Yeah, totally. Well, let me ask you guys, I mean, what else about conferences do you like and don't like? I mean, and feel free to use Wave PHP as an example, because we didn't actually send out a survey, which we probably should have, looking for feedback. But I mean, just like, what do you look for when you try to decide what conferences you're going to attend?
Yeah, Matt, how was your experience?
Dude, yeah, lots of ragging on you.
Okay, so I did not get to Wave PHP, but I will say this. So I've been to the last two Laricon events, and I really like, in some ways, I really like the single track. But then I've also gone to design conferences, or at least I've been to one main design conference in Toronto, and that was a multiple track, or at least it had a single core. And then it had some variety ones you could check out that were more specialized, like with specific ones on typography and things like that. So I found that to be really kind of handy. I liked that approach to it, because like you were going to go see a couple of the main speakers who are like world famous design people, but then you might be really interested in, you know, that, you know, specifically UI development or whatnot. So you can actually head towards that direction. And that is the one thing I find challenging about a single track, is that with single track, it's kind of if you don't really care, is it worth sitting there and watching, or is it better to just go network? But then the challenge I find, sorry, this is a big dump, but the challenge I find with, if I'm not so interested in that particular talk, where do I go to chat? Because it kind of, the venue's kind of like completely shut down different areas just so, because they expect everyone to be in there listening.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, I think some places try to do that with like the unconference room or the uncon track or whatever, but like even that has a little bit of pressure to it. Like it's not really just like open communication in there, because normally it's got a theme or a topic for that half hour slot or whatever. So I agree. I think there should be more of a designated like, look, I am in this area not necessarily to just sit in the corner and be on my laptop. I'm in this area because I didn't want to go to one of the other two talks and, you know, or three talks or whatever. And, you know, I want to come in here and just kind of chat with whoever. Like, I'm here to chat. Like, you know, sticker.
No, some conferences do something with either the lanyards or the name badges, and they typically. I saw it start out of the people who may not want their picture taken, so they get a red lanyard. So if you're taking a picture, it's like if you see somebody with a red lanyard, please don't take a picture, or a green lanyard. And a green lanyard is signifies that they don't mind having their picture taken. I've also seen the red, green, and yellow to signify people who were like, "Hey, come talk to me," or "No, don't come talk to me right now. I need a break," or whatever. Right. So there's these different connotations based on the lanyard color, or maybe some kind of name, something on your name badge, or some sort of indicator of, "Hey, yes, please come talk to me." I can't tell you how many times I've been at conferences and it's like, yes, I want to go talk to people. And I felt kind of awkward trying to go into conversations with other people when they're talking about other things and kind of jumping into some of those conversations. But, you know, if we had some kind of indicator of, yes, please come talk to me about whatever, this thing, that thing, whatever you want to talk about, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, like you said, with single track conferences, it's really hard in some cases, especially if they don't have like a vendor area that has extra seating for people to go and sit down and hang out. Like a lot of the bigger conferences have those kinds of areas in the vendor area where you can go talk to vendors, you can go sit and chat with other people, you can go work or whatever. I think that's really, really crucial for a conference to have, to kind of foster that hallway track and make sure that hallway track happens there at the event, not necessarily maybe back at the hotel bar or somewhere that's like, you know, where you're not going to get all of the attendees able to contribute to this if they wanted to.
Yeah. I was a big fan of the single track. The first couple of years I went to Laricon in Louisville, I was a huge fan of the single track. I'm like, this is a fantastic way to do a conference. I mean, you know, you don't miss anything, because that was the thing. My other exposure was to like PHP Tech, where they had multiple tracks. I mean, not just two or three. I mean, Tech will have like five, six. They have a lot of tracks. And the thing frustrating about that is you find yourself stuck with like two or three good talks, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna have to miss one of these, and you have to kind of guess which one you think is going to be better. And you know, and with the single track, I felt like you didn't miss anything. You got to see all the talks. But I don't know. I think the single track has worn on me a little bit. It's like, I'm finding fewer and fewer talks I want to sit through, and I don't know. Now this year, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think Laricon has the luxury of getting away with the single track because it has a very focused audience. I mean, they know that everyone's there pretty much to see Laravel or something within the Laravel community. And I think for the most part, because of that, you can get away with the single track. You can kind of be bold in that stance. Mm-hmm. But like if you're running like a regional PHP conference like Wave, it's just my opinion. But I mean, I would think that you'd really be taking a risk I go in single track, because now you have to cater to an audience that likes those 8 or 10 talks of the whole conference, you know, and you got obligated. I mean, you got financial obligations to pay for the venue, to, you know, pay for your speakers or whatever. And I know there's sponsors and whatnot, but like, I think it's a luxury of a very, very focused conference that knows that it's going to get the attendance like a Laricon. You know, Taylor's grown it and marketed it and really pushed it for years now, where it's, you know, it sells out in 2 days. Like, it's not a big deal, you know.
It sells itself, yeah.
Yeah, so I think Wave might be able to, you know, just going back to the Wave PHP as an example, like, I think you could build that maybe over a few years, and you'd probably have to take a few risks to get there, but going from, like, year one to year two down to single track might be a bit aggressive.
No, we wouldn't do that.
No. I think the other thing, though, is, like, I definitely like shorter talks, and Laricon's actually doing that this year, I'm pretty sure, like, 30-minute. Talks.
That was actually my next question.
And I think Tech and PHP World, just as other conferences that I go to, like, They've injected those every now and then, like right before lunch, to kind of squeeze an extra talk in here and there. And I've always thought that that was smart. I'd actually like it if, you know, the lunch hour before and the lunch hour after were 30-minute talks just to kind of speed you up to lunch and then kind of wake you back up after lunch, you know? So
I think it's like a really good point that like Laracon and even something to do with like Symphony or the things where it's like very focused topics, I think you can totally get away with single track and something that's a little more broad and generic. I don't think you can really get away with doing that. I think that was like a really good point. I think Longhorn this year is like mixing and matching of like 30 and 60 minute kind of based on topic and based on slot. And I think that's really smart too, is I don't think I'd, you know, some talks kind of need to be 60 minutes. There's just a lot to them. Or if you want to go a little deeper on something, that, you know, some of them need to be 60 minutes and some of them really just need to be 30 minutes and you can kind of get through them. So I think that was really smart. And I think I'll be really looking forward to kind of experience how that goes. Like a mix and match, just kind of depending on topic. As far as two track versus single track, the two track is fine. I think when you start getting into like more than two tracks, I get pulled in too many directions. And, you know, as someone like as a prospective attendee, it's like, I just can't make heads or tails of like what I want to go see and scheduling conflicts. And it gets to be too much. And to speak a little bit more about specifically about Wave last year, I never really felt torn between going to see like two talks at the same time. There was definitely like there was a happy path for me as far as topic goes of like, you know, the way I wanted to traverse through the tracks. I don't know. There's that
two or three at a time is good. Cause I mean, two, especially like I think the choice ends up obviously being very binary, you know, it's just kind of like, I want to see this or that. I mean, I felt the same way about Wave PHP because it's been a while since I've gone to just even a two track and Wave was, so it was nice to, you know, be able to go back and forth. I think the only time I missed one is because I was actually speaking in the other slot, so that's why I didn't get to go. But it wasn't really they were both good talks, but for me, you know, individually, it was a clear choice when it was just two. And I think three would probably be close, but yeah, Tech sometimes or World, it ends up being two or three I want to see in the same slot, and it's just like, oh, scheduling gods, why? But like, you know, I think when you have shorter tracks or less tracks, it's better.
Cool. Okay. So what other topics are we going to talk about? Anybody working on anything interesting?
I'm working on something that I think is a little interesting, especially Laravel related, since it's working on Homestead. With PHP 7.3 going general release shortly before the new year, we need to update a new major version of Homestead to set the new version of PHP to be the default version of PHP. So what that involves is me building a new base box, which a lot of people aren't super familiar with that process. But essentially, I take a really big shell script and I build the Homestead base box, and then I upload it. And that's what Homestead users download and run when they run VagrantUp. Well, the really cool WebSockets package that came from Freak and I'm blanking on his name and I feel terrible.
I think Marcel.
Marcel, yes, sorry. Marcel and Freak worked on this WebSockets package that essentially allows you to remove Pusher from your stack if you want to where you can just, you know, manage, and it's a multi-tenant WebSocket manager. To where you run your own WebSockets. And I've ever since they announced that package, I was kind of like, that'd be really cool to have in Homestead, because I've never really done anything with WebSockets in regards of getting my hands really dirty with the WebSockets. I've built applications that use them, but I've never actually done any of the management. So I figured that would be a fun little project to dive into. So what I'm working on for the next major version of Homestead is I built a Laravel application, obviously, for this app, WebSocket server, and I've called it Socket Wrench. And my plan is to have it natively installed in Homestead for you automatically, to where it's just as easy as you configuring which you logging on or spinning up Homestead, going to a specific URL, and then you can start adding WebSocket servers to your applications running from Homestead. Potentially, this could allow users to start ditching Pusher. And bundling this kind of service with, or just start even making it easier to get into WebSockets and start playing with WebSockets. So lots of possibilities with this. And it's kind of been fun for me because I've been playing with WebSockets and getting more familiar with the process and how everything needs to come together. So it's been kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's super cool, man.
Yeah. Cool. What about you, J-Mac, anything interesting in your end? I know you're
Got
the whole new business going.
I was trying to let other people go first because my list, I didn't want to dominate with my list. So I guess probably since last time, or it was pretty new last time when I was on Lair Chat Live, but I kind of went full time with my side projects. So, I mean, obviously I'm spending a lot of time on Shift. But it actually is a little bit seasonal, I've noticed over the years. Is, you know, obviously with people, holidays, you know, just like anybody else, you know, we all take some time off. So things kind of dip there, and it allowed me to kind of work on a new project, which is actually completely outside of the tech sector. It's inside of finance, specifically stock portfolio investment. So it's called Optionality. What I decided to do was kind of the bridge between the two was basically to just kind of do the whole live, you know, stream bit where I just kind of record kind of each week what I'm working on with that product, because I think so much goes into building a product that's beyond just writing code that it's, you know, it's good to share with different, you know, people and just kind of see, you know, that process. And again, the amount of stuff that goes into like marketing and building the audience and like setting up the website and all these different types of things. You know, beyond just writing code, like honestly, writing code is the easy part. So.
Cool. How about you, PJ? Anything fun?
Oh man. I've been all over the place this week and with the holidays. So, I was forced into buying a car 2 days ago.
Forced?
On a whim. Yeah. I went to take the trash out.
At I saw this on Twitter stream.
Yeah, man. So I went to take the trash out at like 6:30 in the morning, right? Because I don't take it out the night before for whatever reason. So I go to take it out, and I notice a big chunk of the exhaust from my wife's car sitting next to the car. Someone had swept through and stole the catalytic converter. So it was a high mileage, like Honda Odyssey with like 260,000 miles on it. It had just recently sprung like a pretty major oil leak. So we knew we were going to have to replace it at some point, but not like that on like a day's notice. Yeah. So it was just like a whirlwind of like scrambling to figure out what to do and get everything lined up. Like it ended up working out fine now. Like we've got a nice, like reliable car and everything, but
yeah, that was it. One of the things you just like stood there for a minute, looked at it, like, what happened here? What am I looking
I saw it and I knew exactly what happened. Oh. It was just like the disbelief that like that had just happened. Like, oh shit! and just like instantly realizing, well, like it's going to be at least like $500 to $800 to fix this. Like, this car's not worth that. Like. I'm going to have to buy a car today. Shit. So, I don't know. It took me, I'm still kind of like mentally recovering from like the insanity of dealing with that. But, man, I'm just kind of like getting back into the swing of things. So, right before Christmas, I was like starting to ramp up a lot of like research to put together the APIs with Laravel course. I had to take like some time off just to kind of get my head straight and kind of deal with some like personal stuff. And then over the holidays, like, just kind of took some time off to like mentally reset. I was planning on working on the course over break, but I think there were other plans in the works. So I kind of just had to take the time there. And now that I just had to buy another car, I think I might have to like push the course off a little more and do some contract work. So if anybody wants some like private API consulting, advising, I'm totally doing that right now. And
then, and we actually took TJ up on that. We had TJ come talk to our team because we're actually working on a fairly large API project, and we're, you know, contemplating whether we're going to go to microservices We're going to keep it a monolith. And yeah, we reached out to TJ, and he jumped on a chat with our entire Diego Dev team and just fielded questions and a lot of back and forth, and it was extremely helpful. So I do encourage you to do that, and I still appreciate that.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'd like to do. I think moving forward is a lot more of the like mentorship, advising, coaching, teaching. So inevitably I really want to get back and get the course put together, but I also have a lot of value in doing like one-on-one and like workshopping with people. And I think there's a lot of benefit to like kind of get involved and like, you know, spend an hour of the first session just kind of like getting a download of what your problems are, getting a little more embedded in what's going on, and really kind of tailoring the coaching and advice that I have for you. Not only just like APIs, but also like the implementation inside of Laravel. So I can really kind of like help and teach you in the areas that you specifically need to grow.
Yeah, I was just going to say real quick, I mean, I think that's good to point out because, you know, I've done some coaching for a few years as well. And it's one of those things where it's kind of something that's hard to like drum up business, because I feel like it's something that people don't realize, maybe like some of the people in the community, like yourself and so forth, you know, how accessible they actually might be. You know, they just kind of think, oh, well, you know, TJ will never talk with me about APIs. But like, it's good that I think you're kind of putting that out there, because it's one of those things where I feel like teams should take advantage of that more. I mean, like Eric said, I mean, it was super beneficial to their team. I know, you know, Basecode, the higher package, you know, some people you could use like a coach. It came with like a coaching hour where we would review your code together. And some people actually use that for their team. And like those teams were like super, you know, complimentary. And they were like, this is so awesome that we use this. So, I mean, I would encourage, you know, anybody that's on a team or listening, like, you know, get a lunch and learn, or, you know, have a Friday or something and, you know, reach out to these people like this and see, you know, hey, what is it to just do an hour with our team and just have a chat? Like, it's almost like mob or pair programming in a way. Like, you're just going to learn so much from that hour or half hour or whatever. So,
you know, and it's focused learning too.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
The topics get very specific to exactly what you're working on and how you're working on it. So
yeah. So I mean, I just you know, when people are offering like that, like TJ, I mean, I'm just saying generally out there, take advantage.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I've been looking at doing just like, you know, one-off sessions. Like you're just kind of banging your head up against the wall, like, oh, how do I best structure this thing, or like what's a good abstraction here, or you know, I've got this really weird problem where I have to return like a really long-term response. How can I kind of safely do that? Or like, how do I like respond to background jobs? Or if it's just, you kind of want, you know, your team just kind of wants a once a week call, and we set up a retainer. So it's just like you've got an hour set aside like every week, or you've got time already paid for available that you can call me like whenever you've got an issue, and we can just kind of walk through it right there.
Another good one is like, code review. I actually was brought on, like you said, like in a monthly retainer to do code review for like Laravel projects. It's a San Francisco company, but they just ping me on, you know, GitHub. Hey, assign me as a reviewer. I kind of have like a, you know, I guess an SLA where I kind of try to jump in within an hour or so and, you know, review and make comments based on things. But I mean, even that would be something else. Like if someone's building an API, maybe they can come to you and say, hey, can you get in and be our like request reviewer, and you know, you guys work out some kind of schedule for that. Like, I thought that was something else that's like, I didn't think of, but someone reached out to me and was like, can you do this? And I was like, yes, that is awesome.
Yeah. I would totally be up for that as well. That's not really something I thought of, but I'd be very open to do that.
Yeah. Just throwing out different ideas where like, I think people could take advantage of stuff like this. And again, you never know who's accessible to review. Like you can just have an extra wingman or wing woman or wing person on your team. So
yeah, and sometimes it's just a matter of getting fresh eyes. I mean, even as a team, you start talking and you talk yourself into a corner, and everybody's in the same mindset. And everybody's thinking about the problem the same way, and you pull in an outside resource. Like you said, spend an hour or so with the team, and it's just that fresh pair of eyes that look at it and say, okay, have you thought about this, or have you looked into this? We're go ahead.
I was going to say, it's kind of funny the way you're talking about that, Eric, just because of the fact that, so yesterday, I just went on Twitter randomly and, two of my tongue, can't think of his name right now. Jack McDade, he posted on Twitter. He's like, I can't figure this thing out. I've been trying to racking my brain on this for a couple of days. It was some issue with Valet and a version control issue between PHP versions and stuff. And I'm like, well, I could try and help you. I don't know if it'll be successful, but we'll give it a shot. And so he puts me on Slack and we start pair programming a bit or pair problem solving. And within 30 seconds, he gets his MySQL fixed, just explaining it to me what his problem was, just cracks it himself.
Rubber ducking.
Yeah. And then we get into digging into the PHP stuff, which then we kind of just got to a point and said, well, neither of us can figure this thing out. And I ended up spending over half a day in my own mind, like just sitting at my laptop, just trying to replicate and figure out why this was happening, because it's some weird Mojave thing he's having an issue with. And I ended up getting to a point where I'm like, okay, so something's going on that's on such a level that I'm just flabbergasted. Here's the fun fact though. He then sends me a gift card, even though I only spent it like maybe 20 minutes with him. He sends me a gift card for Amazon. I'm like, he didn't have to do that.
He's a thoughtful person, man.
He's just like, hey, you took time out of your day. And I'm like, yeah, but you asked me to. So I bought a vegetable steamer with that gift card.
See, now, I did some pair programming with Matt, and he didn't fix my problem, and I didn't send him anything. Matter of fact, I'm looking for Matt to send me something because he wasn't able to fix my problem. But
that's fair.
Yeah, he can send you a vegetable steamer.
So the moral of this story that I'm hearing is before I pair program with any of you, I need to get some documents signed first, is what it sounds like.
Or some Amazon gift certificates.
Or some gift cards,
Actually, on a serious note, that's a surefire way to have me not help you. It's so ridiculous when I take time to talk with somebody and then the immediate follow-up email is here's this NDA and all this other stuff that we need you to sign before we're ever going to talk to you about our project. I'm like, okay, have fun. I don't even reply to the email. I mean, not to say that I wouldn't sign one, but let's get the ball. Let me know what we're even going to talk about before I decide I'm going to go through all these legal hoops with you.
Yeah.
I remember when I was working at BlackBerry and I was in the little startup community space, and it was so many little startups, and a lot of them were run through university students and stuff. So everybody walked around with NDAs printed, ready to go to just hand you, be like, let's talk about my project. Here's an NDA. Here's an NDA. And they just hand them out like business cards. And you're like, come on, people.
So I got a question. Does anybody have any experience? Because one of the big things we're going down the path of right now is event sourcing. Does anybody have any experience with event sourcing? No, not really, huh?
If you're getting super strict about the old CQRS bit, then
yeah.
I know the experts. I mean, that's Emily Stammy and Bo Simon territory right there. Bo Simon.
Oh, really?
Sorry. Yeah, those two. Both of them have done significant conference speaking about CQRS and event sourcing. Bo actually used it for a startup where he moved over to the UK for I think a year and a half or something, and actually built an application based on CQRS and event sourcing. And I've seen Emily's talk on it, and I've seen his talk on it, and it's something that I'll have to see a talk on four or five times before I wrap my head around it. But it's really awesome stuff.
That's where we're at. Yeah.
Yeah. But, just to have the conversation go a little code though, what's the use case?
So, I need you to sign a document before I explain it to you.
Veto. I'm out. Cancel this thing.
So we actually have a couple of use cases. The two big ones, one of them is an accounting use case, which is basically what event sourcing is designed for, is for accounting. So we're building this fairly complex accounting backend that the owner of the company has basically said, I want event sourcing here because this is what I want to be able to do. I want to be able to rewind time and see what how we got to this state and all that. But even outside of that, it's like one of these paradigm shifts. It's I've had this happen a couple times in my life, and it's happening to me again with the event sourcing. Of once you start to get your head around it, you start to say, "Wow, you know, this is something I should be using a lot more." And we actually have other areas in this platform that we're building that require it. And one of them, a part of this platform, is the ability to create these events, like, you know, like a show or something. But within that event, there are things about the event that can change over time, like pricing. And but you need to understand, you know, if this person bought this ticket at this time at this location, they paid this price, but they paid a different price if they bought it, you know, a week later. And yeah, there's all this dynamic data that's constantly changing, but the history of that data is something you need to retain. And so we're looking to use event sourcing for that. And just in general, like I said, the more we look at event sourcing, the more I'm thinking, wow, how much data over the years have I lost in projects because I've just said, well, we'll just update that row in MySQL and not worry about the historical, you know, part of the data. We'll just rewrite the data and update the date or update, you know. Pricing is a perfect example, right? It's like, you know, oh, you know, this item for this product has changed. So you update that row in a database, you think it's all good. And then a month later or a year later, you find out, oh, we need to run a report on this product, which, you know, from 2 years ago, which had, you know, different, you know, variables around it, like the price was different. And it's really starting to blow my mind of how much data we've thrown away just by updating our relational databases and not tracking how that update happened or why it happened.
I guess some of it comes down to, like, is it data that you really needed to track history on too? Like, I've definitely, when event sourcing kind of got like hot a little while ago, inside of like the Laravel infringe communities, I definitely started looking at it, and I had the exact same reaction too of like, oh my God, I could have had all of this stuff. And then I ended up kind of coming back to a place of like, all right, there's very, very appropriate times and places of it. And I'm sure that I would have just mountains of data that I was holding on to that would never, ever need ever.
But you're right. I mean, it's definitely one of those things that could be overused, and you've got to make sure you're implementing it correctly. But when you have businesses or companies that have been around for 5, you know, 8, 10 years, that legacy data becomes more and more valuable because they don't realize, you know, they don't know what they don't know. And then, you know, 5 years later, they find out, oh, hey, we should have been paying attention to, you know, what users were looking at or what users were clicking on. That was another example of users putting things in a cart and then not following through with the purchase process. And it was like, well, you know, we really should have been tracking when users did that. And event sourcing allows you to rewind time and say, okay, what data is it that you didn't realize you needed, but you want to know now?
Yeah, sure. And if you don't start from the beginning, it's not like you can magically come up with that data later on. So,
right. Well, okay. Yeah. That makes more sense because I didn't really know what you meant by event sourcing. And I'm like, I've heard it in passing a couple times, but I've never really dug into it. But I'm like, when you describe the price changes and stuff, well, that, I'm like, that's just a model history. That I've done that before, because we've done, like, there was a project I worked on once that had to do, it was based on ISO 9000 compliance, and so it had to track a ridiculous amount of data and the entire history, and there was version histories of products themselves in the process of development and everything else. It was an incredibly complicated project, but that ended up being just like historical data tracking, right? That was never anything like, ooh, did they click on this button to get to this point and then get confused?
Yeah. So I'm still struggling with it. I've started to get my head around concepts, but I haven't actually gotten around to implementations and seeing it work correctly. And yeah, one of my biggest concerns is just the amount of data that's going to start to get stored and how you manage that. And I don't know. We'll figure that out as when we get there, I guess.
Sounds like it'd make an excellent talk at Wave PHP.
I've already told the primary developer working on it. I'm like, you might as well start working on that talk right now because this is happening. So, but it's funny because it's also led me down the path, and I've always kind of been a fan of it. But one of these things I've never implemented, but I see the value in it, is NoSQL databases or NoSQL data stores like Mongo and CouchDB, and just putting data in these NoSQL document stores that version it for you. So as the document changes, it keeps versioning it. So you can, again, kind of the same premise. It's not event sourcing. It's more like, you know, Git repos, but you can rewind time on a record and say, okay, when did this information change? And the fact that the information isn't structured, like all the records aren't the same. It, you know, some have different fields in them. And I'm starting to see like how all this stuff is starting to come together. It's like, all right, that's making even more sense to me now.
But again, yeah, I think you've described like a really, and like in our conversation previously about it as well, I think it's like the perfect use case for event sourcing. And you know, I know we were talking about like a little bit of like SOA, and I think that was like perfect for that too. Like you've got like some really ideal conditions to do some of these like really cool things. And especially on like I know you've been talking a lot about GraphQL lately, and like that's like the perfect use case for Graph too, is I'm implementing like an optional GraphQL endpoint for a new service that we've got. That's going to be for, like, I work in the credit card industry. So all of your like transactional reporting, that's all stored in a database, like by our payment gateway. But I've got REST endpoints to pull all that stuff out. But I've also started working on what I think is going to be like an optional GraphQL API to that exact same data, because it's all reporting stuff. Like I don't know what kind of UI or report you're trying to generate. So it's kind of like, this is the perfect opportunity to expose GraphQL, and it's all just fetching data. So you don't have to worry about mutations or anything. I think it's a super ideal situation for Graph there too.
Yeah. I implemented that Lighthouse on, it's funny. We've been pimping the Wave PHP conference all show, but I pulled in the Wave PHP data store and website, and I threw on that Lighthouse in front of it for the GraphQL interface. And I was blown away by how easy it was to implement. And like you said, once you've identified what can be queried, you know, it's up to the consumer, the client to ask for the data. It's like, if you don't want everything, if you just want the first name of everybody who went to the conference, then, you know, just query for the first names. And I am really, really enjoying GraphQL.
Concept and idea. I think there's a lot that can be done with REST that a lot of people don't do. And I think there's like a lot of polarization between like, oh, GraphQL, all the things, or like die hard, just like REST is the only way to do it. And I think there's a good time and a place for both. I think there's a lot more you can do with REST than I think people realize. But I think there are totally appropriate situations where GraphQL really shines. Like it's a query language. So putting it in a position where you've got to query data over the wire, it's perfect. Trying to do that in some sort of like insane query parameter URL string is just, it's not where REST shines.
Yeah, Agni.
Yep.
Well, it's also the difficulty of once you master a tool, using that same tool everywhere, right? So it's the discipline of the developer to realize what is the best tool for the job. Is it REST? Is it GraphQL? Is it some mixture? And that's where a lot of people fall down, is they buy too much into the tribalism. They buy too much into the, I am this, and this is what I do, so this is all I should ever use. And that's what I solve problems with, where in reality, it's much more of a tool belt scenario or metaphor, where the languages we use, the tools we use, are all just tools in that tool belt. They're different screwdrivers, they're wrenches, they're drills, they're all these different tools. So Yeah, it's interesting to see all of these conversations, and especially when people start mixing and matching these ideas. I think that's where innovation really kind of starts to come out, and people start to change their opinions on these ideas once they see other people doing things not quote unquote the right way or the established norm. So it's people taking these risks and chances and seeing what works for them and celebrating what does and learning from what doesn't. Not enough developers do that.
It was funny because in the Laravel community, you could always tell what everybody was getting interested in by whatever Jeffrey Wade was releasing on Laracast. It's like Jeffrey Wade would release a course on like repositories, and next thing you know, everybody's talking about, you know, repository all the things. And then, you know, a month later, he released his command bus, and it's command bus everything.
Oh, God. Sorry. Jumping in here. I just was finishing up a human service for this project, you know, that they wanted me to upgrade. And it was just kind of like, it probably had like 90 commands in it from command bus. You know, it was old 4.2. And I mean, it's just like, it just takes hours to untangle that because it's not, you know, I definitely appreciate the pattern then. Don't get me wrong. Like I get it then. I think what bothers me is that, you know, it's just in my mind, you know, someone Yagni and everything, it's just prime example of exactly what Joe was talking about, where it was just like, gosh, this was such a fad. Like everything was a command in this thing. And it was just like, you can't even fix it now because there's no command in Laravel anymore, which is also the point of it, how transient these fads are, like how just quickly they're in and out. Like, I think that's something that you'll find in an experienced developer, and an experience could mean a lot of things. And I'm actually, this is something I was thinking about earlier in the week, so it's kind of not all the way thought out. I want to kind of turn it into a blog post, but I'm really starting to believe that experience is really everything. You know, experience is what allows you to kind of build out that tool kit, you know, kind of as Joe was saying. I think it's a great analogy, but like I do woodworking, for example, right? Let's just stick with analogy. So I do woodworking and I have like, I don't know, 15 chisels, right? But like, if you're like a serious master, like craftsman with woodworking, you can, this is the question to ask this person. Hey, how many chisels you got? Because they'll have a ridiculous number. You don't even know that they make that many chisels, but they'll have it. You know, and that's the whole point, is that they may not go and use, you know, this one chisel, this event sourcing chisel or this command bus chisel or whatever it is every single time, right? They've learned over the years and kind of developed this toolkit, developed this experience to be able to say, oh, okay, I need chisel number 76 for this. So having the right tool and the experience to know when to use the right tool or even what the right tool is. You might not even know how to use that tool, but you know what the right tool is, and then you learn. And I think that's where I am, and I really try to advocate for people. And you can't get there overnight, and you really can't be told to get there overnight. But I think if you can wrap your head around that belief and be willing to accept, hey, I don't have to jump on the fad, I personally believe you're going to be a lot better of a developer a lot quicker.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to like identify them and go try it out. Like, definitely prototype with it. Like, spin up a new app and hack on it, or fork your main project and like play with the idea. I think it's totally valuable to like go and use it, and that's kind of how you gain that experience. Is you go and try that fad out, and you go, oh, you know, this isn't really going to make sense for the entire project, but there is this one piece that this is going to work perfect for.
Yeah, exactly. You try it out and then you put it back on the shelf. You don't try it out and then apply it to every one of your current projects.
Right.
that's what I'm saying.
And I think that's a bigger scoped thing, or a really important point to make about this, is that consistent experimentation with new ideas and new patterns can really be helpful. And then it's good sometimes to bring those patterns or those new technologies into a project, but it's also important to not force it in and not expect it to, like, if you learn about a new way and then, you know, you're a little patient with it and you decide this is the best way to do this now, it doesn't necessarily mean that the best thing to do is to scrap an entire project or demand that the whole thing be rebuilt from the ground up to use this new methodology or new technology, because, you know, you can dig a hole real fast.
Yeah. Yeah. DHH has got a good quote there talking about, like, you know, I guess, you know, he's basically saying, you know, good, you know, developers or whatever, basically know how to rewrite an application, you know, not by throwing it all away, but by, you know, finding a piece that needs to be fixed and making it better, you know, within the context of the greater application, not just, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, not just like doing a grand rewrite per se. Like they actually can hone in on this one piece and say, look, this one piece can change, you know, in a better way with this without having to rewrite everything else.
And like progressive, evolution of like, all right, I'm going into like add this feature or fix this bug. Like while I'm in this one piece, I can like tune up and polish this one piece. And then the next time I have to like come across this other piece while I'm working on a different feature. Oh, great. Now here's an opportunity for me to kind of fix this up. Like you don't have to make one big grand sweeping pass, you know, 10,000 file PR at once to kind of like move things over. You can definitely like, I think the most enjoyable experience I've had over time is like just anytime I'm going in a feature, like adding a new feature or fixing a bug or happen to come across something that doesn't feel good. Like, I don't know, like leave it better than you found it kind of thing.
Boy scouting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I paired with a guy a long time ago. His name was Samuel and we were working on something and, you know, he was kind of just like cleaning these things up as he was reading the file. Like we were getting down to the line we needed to fix where we were going to add the feature. We kind of already knew, but he's kind of working through the file and he's, you know, he's formatting stuff. He's cleaning stuff up, kind of like you're talking about. I was like, what are you doing? Like, let's go to line 102 already and get to work. He's like, oh, we're Boy Scouting, you know, but he's like in the process of learning the feature and seeing the things that, you know, he left it better than he found it, which is kind of like a, you know, a Boy Scout motto or rule or whatever. So that's always stuck with me. Like rubber ducking is Boy Scouting.
Yeah, I dig that, man.
There was something else I was going to say, but I forgot what it was. And I know we're close to time, so I'll just shut up.
I was going to say, it'd be perfect time. We could use like one more thing before we wrap up.
It was something. Oh, I think I was just going to say that, like, I think that's critical, too, though, is not necessarily get lost in the weeds. Like, I can't tell you how many times I go in to shift and like a user maybe reported, oh, hey, for 5.6, you missed this one thing or something, you know, because, you know, something's been backfilled from 5.7 to 5.6. And so now I should add that to the PR comments and or automate that as part of the 5.6 shift upgrade. But, you know, while I'm in there, I'm like, oh, I hate the way I, you know, add these comments to the PR. I need to use like a presenter. So like I'm definitely thinking of ways to improve it. But I think a flip side of that is, again, to have the discipline to say, not right now, not today. You know, I came in here to fix this one thing. Let's fix that and not, you know, go everywhere. I think that's kind of the flip side to that coin of having the right tool, and that precision is also the discipline to know I'm not going to take on that task just yet because I don't have the right tools or I don't have the right experience or I don't have the time even.
So it's the decision-making process and the trade-off comparison and making the right decision based on the right trade-off. And one of the things that I've been working through lately is how do I teach that? And I've kind of struggled with that. And I've asked several people that I would consider mentors. I've asked them about it. And one of the individuals got back to me with some really great information, and it was all about describing the business value and making the developers see it from the business side and to understand the actual deadlines that come from the client needing a feature. And you know, you're building this thing for the client that the client needs to do a workflow or do a process to make money for the client. Well, do you spend the 2 hours refactoring some JavaScript that may change how the page looks? Well, no, that's probably the wrong trade-off to make at that point in time. Maybe we should just make this endpoint efficient or what have you, whatever the feature may be. But I found it very difficult to describe that kind of decision-making and therefore I'm having a hard time trying to figure out how to teach that kind of decision-making. And it's one of those things that it's so native and it feels so second nature to me. It's like, how do I teach another developer how to breathe? That's what it feels like to me. So
I think it's like a super, super hard to teach that, kind of like I was saying earlier. I think you have to, again, you have to have some kind of experience, and there's probably different experiences. But for me, I feel like kind of like what you said, but to paraphrase it, like you have to have a legitimate deadline, like a real deadline, not the boss said so, like a market launch or, you know, a time frame when this thing's no longer applicable. Like it has to be out the door, like a real deadline. You got to have a real deadline on a product that you legitimately have buy-in on, not just something you're building for some client, like something you know the ins and out of, you like, you want, you use yourself, something. I think if you're a developer and you can get that cross-section, it's one of the ways, not the only way, but one of the ways to definitely level you up to kind of what we're talking about here. I mean, just as a real world example for me. Oh, sorry, you go ahead, TJ.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, kind of while Joe was talking, it another part of that is it's not just like, it's not just about like the business value that might bring or like monetary connotations or anything, but there's also looking at that in like a risk assessment of like, is doing this refactor going to bring in bugs? So not only am I like changing this code to kind of scratch my own itch of like, I just don't like the way this looks, or I maybe want to like try a different architecture pattern here. Like, is there a risk involved in that? Like, are you going to end up like now introducing a bug when you could have just had like a 3-line fix and like the bug was done, or add a method and like a route or something, and now the feature is done, but you end up in a situation where now you've introduced like a bug, and not only is it, you know, like you maybe blew the deadline doing.
I think I lost TJ at the end there. I don't know if that was me or TJ.
I think it kind of jumped out on me. TJ, what was that last thing you said? I think we lost you there for a second.
Yeah, I just kind of like wrapping up and like further driving home, like that it's like a point of risk too, of like, you know, if you're adding, you know, if you've got like a one line thing, or you add like a couple methods, to then also in that same, you know, you maybe blow the deadline by like not doing this big refactor or changing architecture patterns, but now you've introduced a bug or several bugs, and now you've caused like a real big problem. So not only taking a look at from like the business value side of things, but also like risk management on what you're doing in addition to what you needed to be doing in the first place.
Cool. I think that's a good spot to wrap this up. Everybody good? Anybody have any final words they'd like to get out there? Anything they want to promote or talk about?
I am hoping to release the Laravel Fixer early next week.
What is the Laravel Fixer?
Since LayerCon last year, I put out the analyzer, and it was a little bit, to be fair, it was a little bit, I guess, selfish because I needed some data for the Laravel by the numbers talk. So part of the analyzer being free was that, hey, I'm also going to look at your project and get certain higher bits of data. So that was kind of out there. But I've always wanted to make kind of the addition to that shift, which is basically attempting to automate several of those things to be fixed. The analyzer basically says, hey, you could be using the request object, or you can inject this, or hey, there's these new, you know, blade directives, or you've got some old syntax. So it's a combination of the analyzer and the linter, but it's a little bit more opinionated. So, you know, you don't have to run it. It's not forced as part of the upgrade that you have to write your code this way. But I'm going to put out some early versions of it, and I've got some grand ideas for it. Like, I want to have maybe like a .shift file where you could kind of tweak what, you know, automation pieces happen, or maybe how they happen. So if you like using the request helper versus the request injected variable, like you could configure that for shift and it still automates it. So I've got some big ideas for it, but the early beta will be out next week.
Awesome. All right, you heard it here first. Laravel Fixer next week. Keep an eye out for it. And I think on that note, we're going to wrap this up. Thanks, everybody who did join us to watch. And if you're listening on the podcast, thanks for subscribing to the podcast. We appreciate it. And maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks from now, we'll all get together and do this again.
Thanks. And for then we'll listening. Cancel it, and then we'll end up doing it still.
Yeah, see, we'll cancel like 1 minute before.
Nobody was aware of that until you guys brought it up. Nobody would have been any the wiser that we blew this whole
Between
thing off.
Between that and my monitor not working, I was about to flip out and quit.
I said, I'm going to Ruby.
That right, was drastic.
Bye. Right, I'm going to stop the broadcast.